I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to episode 72 of The Neuro Show. In today's episode,
we've got another hookless tyre blowout. What are the UCI going to do about it?
UAE tour and the opening weekend in Belgium. Lots of talking points.
We chat about the pending giant TCR release. We've got mechanics impersonating riders and getting banned.
And pie in the sky bike tech. What would really get us excited? All right, let's get into it. All right, yeah, shill. Coil. what do you got for me? What conspiracy theories? Tin foil. I can't even talk. I'm so in the conspiracy world. All right, what's going on?
The hookless cabal. Back at it again with a blowout.
Oh,
2024, the year of the rim blowout. We're on for one. Did you see this, Chris?
I did.
UAE tour. Thomas de Gendt. Anytime you crash at the UAE tour, you're going at least 55 because you're on hot mix in the middle of the desert with a 60k an hour tailwind. And when your hookless tire blows off the rim because the tire's too narrow, that is a nasty spill. So this is what happened here. So he's on the Orbea running his nice Zip 353 hookless rims. What's happened is it's come out, his tires are too narrow. For the updated standard of the hookless, means there's not enough grab from the tire to the rim, and it's blown off. So initially it came out, and people were going, "Oh, did he hit something? What's happened here?" The team came out and said, "No, it's all within spec." And then people, some of the journalists did some digging, and it's come out. Here's heaps of articles on this. Essentially, with his rims, the 353s that have a 25mm internal width. They need to use, according to the ETRTO and ISO standards, at least a 29mm tyre to be safe. Now, because he's racing on hot mix in the middle of the desert at 60k an hour, he doesn't want to run 32mm tyres, so the team put 28s on. That is not safe, and the tyres have basically just they've blown off the rim. How many times have we talked about hookless already on the show? It's kind of like so many years on and it's still, they're blowing off. Now, this was quite a blatant one because high profile crash, early part of the season, lots of people were throwing their thoughts in. Even the riders union, Adam Hansen runs it, he was tweeting saying, "We're not happy with road hookless." Came out black and white, said it. So there's been a lot of commentary going back and forth about the place for hookless in the pro peloton. I don't want to spend too much time going back and forth on it. I think we've been pretty clear. I'm pretty clear that I kind of want to look a few levels above it because there's a lot of things at play here. Firstly, there's a lot of tech going on in these wheels. So he's on a very wide Zip 353 with hookless rims. He's also got the tire liner in there. So the foam thing, there's a lot of... And the sealant in there, you're kind of going, geez, there's a lot of new tech in that wheel. I just that from a safety point of view is just a concern overall. Does the foam insert impact the way that the hookless tire grips the rim? Has that been tested?
But isn't the biggest issue here that if the pro teams can't work this stuff out, what bloody hope does the normal everyday punter have? Like, it's they're a full-time job of every single person involved in this to get this stuff right. And they know the consequences of it. It's not like they're just suddenly deciding one day to the next, I will just slap this tyre on, that tyre on. Every decision is made with performance in mind and safety in mind, you would have thought. So if they're still, if they're stuffing this up, like that's, this is almost for me a bit of the final nail in the coffin.
Oh, 100%. And so the problem is, I struggle with this one a little bit because I'm of the opinion that the stuff for the pros should be for the pros. So, for example, I was against the banning of the aero tuck because it's a bad look for the general public, but it's pro racing. They should be able to do it. Same with the turned-in levers as well. I mean, yes, it's kind of dangerous, but they're pros. I'm of the opinion we should let the pros do pro things and not be like, well, let's ban that because if some punter does it, it's a bad look. So in this case, part of me says, well, we should, the pros should just ride the best equipment that they want to use and not worry about whether that's safe for the consumer. But that doesn't appear to be, from what I've seen with the UCI apply their rules, they're generally applying it from not just what's going to be safe for the pros, but how is that going to carry over in a lot of their rules. So I'd be surprised if they don't have action on this.
And that, I think, is where I kind of want to take this, because going into the details of what we think of hookless rims, like you said in the past, we've done that. I actually this week went back and listened to our chat we had with Peak Talk. I will link that below. It's about 14 minutes he talks about hookless rims. Just go listen to that. That is all you need to hear. He does it again, I think, on his own show when he had Dan Bigham on. Again, really, that's all you need to know about why hookless rims even exist in the first place and the issues around them, just the engineering issue. I'm not going to go and pretend about that stuff.
Yeah, I'm so close to doubling down on it all. Well, we don't even want hookless. No one wants hookless. Fuck with hookless. But the problem, this is a problem. Zip are all in on hookless. Kadex, Giant, they're all in on hookless. What the hell would the teams do if the UCI said, nah, we don't want you riding hookless, it's dangerous. You're all going to go back to hooked rims. What do they do with the 300-400 sets of wheels they've got at the service course? Does Zip even make hooked rims anymore? I'm pretty sure they don't even really make hooked rims anymore. Kadex, all the Giant bikes come stock with hookless rims. I just don't see how that's feasible, how that'd happen, which is what I probably think should happen if they're consistent with how, with if the UCI are consistent with how they apply the rules. You would say, well, you banned all that other crap, you should probably ban hookless. How does Zip and Giant's a freaking massive company, surely there's got to be some pressure there to say, well, no, you can't just ban hookless. We got all the, like, how would that work?
Okay, so I've done some asking around, and I'm in the proper, this is the proper rumor mill. All right. Okay. There is absolutely no facts here. None whatsoever. Proper rumor mill.
The rumor silo.
Deep in forums and just random chat. Okay. So Envy aren't all in on it in the sense that they still do make hookless rims and they have the capacity from a production perspective to switch back to hookless rims. Switch back to hooked rims if the case may be. Giant being Giant have the scale to be able to do that and not write it off, but there would be, there's the potential to do it. Zip, however, like you said, are absolutely all in on this. And one of the great little rumors I heard was that they would continue to make hookless rims. However, they would, I'm going to get the wording right to this. In fact, I don't care if I get the wording right. They would in some way, glue is not the right word, but sort of put in a hook to the actual hookless rim. And that would, it's
what,
potentially
like bond in a
hook.
Okay, so so almost like a half recall of take your hookless rims in and we'll put a hook back on.
We'll bond it in. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. That was my rumor hot off the rumor press, because they are in a much more difficult situation if a ban came in to turn around and do that.
Okay. Far out. Yeah, that'd be. That's why I just go, I don't think it could happen.
Oh, so I again, mean, here's the other. I was trying to think about this. What is there any other tech that was pushed on us by the industry or by a number of brands, and then they had to walk it back. I mean, there's nothing that's been a safety thing. I kind of think about the cycle of stuff. You know, you could argue things like bottom brackets have gone through this cycle of you went into press fits and now we're all now heading back towards threaded bottom brackets, which maybe Cannondale had a bit to say in why we first went down that press fit route. But, it, you know, you're not really talking about the same set of stuff. People will say, oh, disc brakes. Remember when disc brakes came in? But no, that was industry-wide. I'm talking about a couple of brands pushing it. I can't think of anything.
Yeah. I do feel like that this hookless thing happening to a pro rider on a pro team is kind of vindication for the gaslighting of, oh, no, why do we do hookless? Oh, it's more aero. It's lighter. It's better for you. You want hookless. Sponsored by hookless. And now it's just every year that kind of goes on, more and more people keep just going, well, we don't really want hookless. And then you've got the leader of the riders union saying, we don't want hookless. And it's sort of that sort of gaslighting of, no, hookless is awesome. What do you mean? It's not dangerous. You just don't know what you're doing.
Do you think it's cut through though? So the reason I ask you that is, so I reached out to a couple of bike shops. Yes, Keish here, but another one in Sydney, one in Victoria, Grant, obviously, I chatted to him, and also the guys in Fresno that I went and saw. And I asked them just sort of straight up, does anyone come in talking about hookless in terms of when they're making wheel decisions? Oh, are they hookless? Aren't they hookless? I don't want that. I do want that. It pretty much across the board, no one comes in and says, oh, but they're hookless. I don't want those. It hasn't cut through to that level.
That's even worse.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying that's a good thing.
Oh, okay.
I'm not saying that's a good thing. You know, the Nero show, if you know, sad crowd that are all sitting around watching us at the moment, and you and I, one of them, we're like months, a year into this controversy that just blows completely over the heads of 99% of most consumers.
Which is exactly the problem. If you're running hookless wheels, you should at least know you're on hookless, because when you buy new tyres, they need to be compatible.
But that message from Grant, did you read that? That was what he said. He said, put aside all the things about people not knowing or what they're doing. What he sees a lot of the time when a bike comes in for a service, they've just got any old tyre, any old, doesn't even necessarily have to be sometimes a tubeless tyre on a hookless rim. They just slap something on. It's not information that gets handed over. And having not gone into a bike shop and bought a bike for 20 years, I don't know. It probably doesn't come up in conversation.
No, I don't think someone at the Giant store is saying, hey, by the way, just keep in mind these are hookless rims, so you're going to be limited. They're not going to say that. All the more reason why. But there's no benefit. So anyway, I'm not. That's the thing. If it was actually better, then there'd be more of a discussion. But just put the hooks back on. Bond the hooks back on, and just, can we just move on?
Oh, like hashtag bond the hooks.
Bond the hooks.
Bond the hooks.
Bond the hooks back on. Yeah. Just like you put your threaded bottom brackets back in because you couldn't make a round bottom bracket. We'll just go back to square one, and that's there we go. Good, as far as I'm concerned.
The only other long play maybe with this that I could think about was Zip. Let's say they work with the UCI and they double down on hookless. They're not hashtag bonding the hooks. And they do like a minimum internal width of 28 mil or something ridiculously wide that forces you to put on a wide tire. I don't know.
Well, so yeah, that would have to make you run an even wider tire. So it'd be the opposite. It'd be like, so they've said here in this article, so Hunt have purposefully stuck with a 23 mil internal so that a 28 mil is within, I'm not going to say safe, I'll say within standards, because then you've still got the problem of, well, what pressure you're putting that at. You have to really make sure that's accurate. So I don't know, saying just because the tire fits the ETRTO compliance is safe, arguable, but at least it's compliant. So maybe, but is Zip going to go back to narrow rims. Like, people want wider rims so you can have a nice wide tire that has low rolling resistance and is still aero. So they'd be hookless doesn't work. It doesn't even in that scenario. That's you're back at square one. I don't get it. But as you say, if your factory and all your molds are all it's all done, you're done. I don't know. It's a tough one. It's just not a good ad, is it? I'm just looking at that photo of that Orbea again, and there's just this rim with sealant all over it, this green piece of foam, and you're just going, what are we doing? The sport's dangerous enough. Can we just keep the tires on the rims, please?
I was just going to say something about, I hate leaning into the conspiracy. I hate when the conspiracy theory stuff is right.
It's true.
It's like, you know, it's kind of frustrates me because YouTube is the home of it, and I feel like, you know, we do spend a lot of time getting stuck in those weeds, but there's just no avoiding it here. It's there, right there.
It's right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Before we move on, a quick word from today's show partner, sports micronutrition company, Pillar Performance. Traditional nutrition products like hydration and carbohydrates will take you through to the finish line, whereas Pillar's mission is to get you to the start line in the best condition over and over.
In this episode, Pillar wants to bring awareness to the benefits that magnesium supplementation can have for you as a cyclist, particularly as it relates to sleep and recovery. So do you have trouble getting to sleep each night? Do you suffer from reduced sleep quality, particularly after your biggest training days? If so, magnesium supplementation can help improve all areas of your sleep by regulating melatonin production and reducing cramps that interrupt your sleep quality. Pillar's Triple Magnesium is a 300 milligram blend of absorbable forms of magnesium that tastes great and is Informed Sport batch tested to be free from banned ingredients.
If you would like to try Pillar today, get 15% off by using the code Nero at pillarperformance.shop. Or for our audience in North America, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter the code Nero for 15% off. General race chat then, Jesse. We've had a bit of action.
Yeah, so I watched highlights of the UAE too. You're plugged into all of the races, it looks like. Can we do like a scattergun?
Mm-hmm.
Just quick thing. I don't want to spend 45 minutes on it. What's chat? What have you seen?
What's chat? Well, I do want to talk about decathlon a little bit later on, but in terms of just, I don't know whether decathlon are the fake news story of 2024 or they really are legit, because this is a team that was oh so forgettable for so long in AG2R, and now it's, boys, we're lining it up. Boys, We're launching
team attack.
To use a bloody Lantern Rouge phrase, team attack, like tug buddy attacks on the last sort of 4Ks of climbs. Like, who are you? What have you done?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, but it's the bike.
It's the Rizzle.
Yeah. They've lent into it. I reckon's going on? For years, there was the specialized package. You know, who was it? Was it Dan was talking about when one of the riders from Luxembourg was going back to one of the specialized teams. His name was Bob Jungels.
Okay, yeah.
Bobby Jungels was going back to a specialized team, and what he was so looking forward to was just getting back on the package. I reckon Decathlon have the package because they've got the Swiss side wheels that have been designed with the bike, and now you've seen the Decathlon helmets. Every man and his dog has sent me the Decathlon shoes that have just been launched. Beautiful, beautiful white road shoes package. It's all just fitting in nicely. I'm on board with it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it? What a start for Rizzle too, to come out, sponsor a team, Decathlon, bang on the jersey, and you're going, we're just going to be having a meeting in 6 months going, boys, can you just get a result? And they come out, bang, Ben O'Connor cleaned up. On that hilltop finish,
that was good.
That was really good, really cool. There was a bit of chat going around about UAE tour, though. I saw this on Twitter, and lots of Facebook comments on any of the videos or photos that popped up, essentially making fun of the race because there was no spectators. Look at the crowd, and it would be always the most liked comment on whatever I was watching. Do you have a thought on this? Do we care that there's a race that there's 10 people watching in person?
I am so out of touch with pro cycling Twitter army. I don't care at all. at all. Makes no impact in my life in any way, shape, or form. It's watching sport from that part of the world, that's what it looks like.
I don't quite understand. Firstly, it's a really rich race where the stakes really matter and everyone wants to win. So it's good racing. I actually think the landscape looks really cool. How often do you see people riding on a road in the middle of the desert? I think it looks cool. Did you see the camera on one of the sprint stages? They had like the Champs-Élysées sprint tracking camera on one of the sprint stages. That was sick. Okay, there's no one watching. Fuck, get over it. Isn't it just kind of, it's the crowd that want to kind of poke fun at the race for sports washing or some kind of something like that. There's some agenda underneath. And then the easiest thing to say is not actually just say what you mean, but just go, oh, look, here, there's no crowds. It's like, it's bike racing. It's good bike racing. It funds the riders. They're getting good prize money. They all want to win. The camera's good. The streams are good. Live stream on YouTube. I'm watching for free. Can we just get over the no crowds thing? I just think it's cheap.
Speaking of best camera shots, Tour of Oman, tracking shot when they crested that climb, and you've got Yates and a couple of others. It's just a helicopter tracking shot running along they're running along the ridge of that run in is going to be very hard to beat as the best camera shot of 2024. I'll see if I can dig it out and put it in the B-roll.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Okay, a couple of little random other ones that I've got for you. So obviously we had Omloop as well over the weekend. Just no real race chat here from me, just far more important things. I don't like the Euro Champs jersey. It really annoys me. It's very confusing. Obviously not European.
No?
You like it? I don't know.
You're not European.
It just looks like a Brussels, yeah, I don't know, just an EU executive.
Oh, you're just looking for things to shit on Visma for because they won every race in the last month.
Though I did like his bike, so I have to sort of flip on that. Like that blue Euro bike's very nice.
Mm-hmm. Tom Scoins has a big butt.
He's changed completely physically.
Okay.
He physically looks totally different to what was a bit of a stage, what I kind of remembered as a bit of a stage hunting sort of puncher type guy. He looks like a classics powerhouse now. Whether he just had absolute diamonds in his legs on that day, I don't know. But no, he just, when he came up on screen and there was a Trek rider in the break, I just assumed it was Mads Pedersen.
Yeah.
Didn't know Mads wasn't riding at the time, but it, like just build wise, I just assumed, oh, that's him. Nope. It's Squeens.
Interesting. Okay. Good on him. Transform himself around, going, okay, I want to target the early season classics before things get really hot for the big one. So I'll put on a couple kilos, get stronger. Well, I like that, right? That you've seen that somewhat often riders bulk up a little bit.
Two other quick kit ones for you. Is Jan Tratnik the first pro cyclist to win a classic wearing a neck buff?
I saw that. He's on a training ride.
Beautiful.
That's very uncomfortable.
It felt like I was watching him win a training ride. That's what it did look like. Yeah, and it was still on during his post-race interview. It's great. It's very Coyle-esque, actually, that move. And the only other kit one was, so I noticed a few of the Visma guys have been doing this. It's not that they're running three-quarter length. So they're not running the classic knee, over-the-knee, Valverde-style three-quarter length nick. It's like a just at the knee.
Yes. Nick. Yeah.
It's like, have you pulled the knee warmers up far enough? I'm not quite sure what's going on there.
It's a cut off leg warmer. It's more of a fashion thing. It's not actually covering maybe a third of the kneecap. So it's not really keeping your knees warm, but it is a fashion thing. Guys do it domestically too in some of the colder NRS races. You cut your leg warmers off and I think it looks cool personally, but I don't the function is questionable. I guess because people don't like the feeling of the leg warmer over the knee. It interacts with how your knee tracks, and it feels a bit awkward, especially because it creases on the under the back of the knee. So you kind of cut it as low as you can before it starts getting annoying, and that's probably the reason for it.
I do love some of these early season races where you just get the full mix match of kits, like guys running full legs, just full winter gear, everything, and then potentially regretting it in the last 30 minutes. And then you get the other sort of flip of it of guys running too little but then trying little tricks like, you know, a buff or a knee warmer to try and cover the bases. My last little bit about this first little batch of racing. How patriotic do you get with this stuff? Because this was I dipped into a little bit of the Twitter stuff when Ben O'Connor and so Jay was leading that UAE tour, and Ben O'Connor had won that stage. And I saw all these guys like, oh, Aussies are up there. Hey, Aussies, rah, Aussie, Australia. It doesn't do anything. Like, I will cheer for, you know, Australian teams. And I can't get to that place. I don't know what it is about cycling. But when the riders are in their trade teams, I am more likely to support style of a rider. I don't know. The way a race has even been ridden, how that might play out.
I'm very much on that.
Yeah.
Like, I'll flip-flop throughout the stage. So I want the racing to be as exciting as possible. So if someone breaks away, I go, oh, I hope the bunch catches them. And then if the bunch is riding along and someone attacks, I'm going, oh, yeah, let's go. I want them to win. Same on a climb. I'm always just cheering for whatever's going to bring the race back together.
When's the last time you cheered for an Aussie? Like, full Aussie?
Well, the Jay Vine one's not really fair because it's just him personally.
Doesn't count.
I wanted Jai Hindley to win the Giro.
Because he's an Aussie?
Yes, because he's an Aussie winning the Giro.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's
good. I'll give you that.
I was definitely in that camp, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because that's a big deal.
Yep.
That I was getting patriotic then, yeah.
It is. It's. I do feel like I'm that kind of, I'm almost like too cool. It's like that, you know, that sort of pathetic, like, oh, you know, I'm so into the sport. Yeah. The nations don't matter to me. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So anyway, hopefully I'll try. I'll try cheering.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So this was a funny sanction came up from the UCI. So the UCI Disciplinary Commission, the UDC, have sprung a team for dressing up their mechanic as a rider and trying to do a dodgy at the sign-on, would you believe? An incognito. So what's happened here? They did a whole press release on it. So UCI Women's Continental Team, Siniska Cycling, at a one-day UCI race in Belgium, they only had 4 riders that can start. So at a UCI race with a UCI team, you need to have 5 riders minimum or they won't let you start. So for whatever reason, they only had 4 riders available. So the team sports director has gone to the mechanic and said, hey, just put a face mask on, take the rider's ID, and just go try your luck at sign on. And sign on as the fifth rider. So they've done that. And then obviously the UCI commissaire at the sign on's gone, oh, could you take your mask off so I can see who you are? And Bob's your uncle. It's the bloody mechanic, not the rider. And that's day done for this team trying to sign on for this race. And there are some very heavy sanctions that came from this. I mean, to me, it sounds innocent enough, but the team sports directors, he's banned from any activity in cycling until the end of December 2025. 2 years, can't work with the team. The incognito mechanic dress up, has been banned until the September 2024. And then the poor four riders that have just kind of gone along with it, except they've been reprimanded and sanctioned, which doesn't really say much. And then the team's basically banned until the next race they were confirmed for, which could have been later in the year. So very heavy sanctions for that. But I just thought it was funny because you would be surprised how often something like this would happen. Like, can I break it down? There's a lot of things at play here that people probably don't realize the sign-on process for a race. I think they are actually quite unlucky. So a couple of things.
They are definitely very unlucky.
Yes.
Go on.
Okay, firstly, usually for a race, you don't actually need a show ID. Usually the team manager goes up, usually the day before the race or the morning of the race, it's a one-day race, hands over all the rider IDs. The commissaire hands them the race pack with all the numbers and off they go, right? So there's an obvious potential issue there. And well, who are you actually signing on? Secondly, no one's checking who's pinning the number on. You know, Chris Miller could be pinning a number on and it's my race number. You could be on the start line. You could do the entire race. No one would be any the wiser because there's no one's actually standing there from the UCR going, rider ID number 31 is Jesse Coyle. Hold on. Who the hell are you? No, they don't actually check that. So that's the first thing. They're just quite unlucky that this was a race. There are some races when I was over in Europe where every rider individually needs to go up with ID and sign on individually. So that looks like it's the case here. That's not the case at every race. I think they are quite unlucky, but you could imagine what's the situation here. You had six riders, right? Two get sick, one's crashed. So maybe you've got three or four riders at the start line. Do you try and do a sneaky at the sign on and then maybe only three end up making it to the start line? Or do you just leave the race?
Hypothetically, Jesse, hypothetically, if you were in a team and you were doing a stage race and the first stage was a prologue, but it was obviously the day before stage one, and one or two of the hypothetical riders couldn't get to the start of that race. They had full intentions of making it and doing the whole thing. But sometimes, like, at this level of racing, most people are either doing jobs, studying, all kinds of different bits and pieces. So it's not that easy to get to these sort of things. Sorry, it wasn't a prologue. It was a crit. I got that wrong. It's a crit. Prologue would have been far more difficult. A crit situation.
Especially if the person at the start knows who the riders
are. It's got full visor helmet on. But a crit was a much easier situation. Yeah. And really all you had to do is start the crit.
Yeah.
So luckily for the hypothetical team, there was a mechanic who was able to get the bike and, you know, you'd go and sign up. So you got the actual transponder and all that kind of stuff. And that bike, therefore, just had to cross the start line of the crit.
Yep.
Cross the start line of the crit, pull out at the end of the next corner.
You got pulled. Got dropped. Yep.
That particular rider has thus started the race, had no, obviously, intention of doing anything in the GC sort of thing, so that's all fine. Arrives next day and away we go, transponder and all that kind of thing, continue on. I honestly reckon this sort of stuff happens all the time.
I just assumed that if this happened, the commissaire would just go, oh, fuck, come on, move along. But they've obviously been reported and then the wording is it played an active role in fraud. And you're like, whoa, like this is like fairly common because you're in a bike race, you're flying in and out, flights get delayed, people miss, blah, blah, blah. The only thing I would say is this actually, we were in this situation when I was in Europe in 2022 with the team. Two of the riders got COVID, one crashed. We literally had three. You need five minimum. You just go speak to the race organizers and explain the situation. They'll let you start. So committing fraud when you don't have to is just a dumb decision by that DS. They should have just spoken to the race. They'll let you start with three riders unless they're real prick.
The COVID thing definitely allowed for more leniency, though. I don't know if you could still do that now.
Possibly not.
There's a bit more of a clampdown.
Yeah, but you would. I don't know if that DS tried, but that's the logical thing is just ask if you can start with three. Most of the time they'll go, oh, okay, yeah. Well, if there's a good reason for it.
We never did exactly this, but I wouldn't hesitated to have a crack at doing it. Just in terms of like
between that and not starting.
Well, that's it. Everything you do to try and get to the start line and do all that sort of stuff. Okay, then you have your rider pull out the day before, whatever. You just got to get it done somehow.
I think one of the reasons why they have the five rider minimum rule,
which is fine. I
think the rule makes people kind of go, well, why do you have to have five? Why can't you just have one? Well, you've got a limited number of teams that can enter a race. And if all these teams just start rocking up with, oh, we just sent one rider, we entered it 6 months ago and guys couldn't be bothered, or two riders, it's just crap. You end up with 80 people in the race. So it's nice to have a five minimum so you've actually got a proper race and not have people just taking the piss if it's a lower level race. So I understand the rule from that point of view too. But definitely this is the first time I've seen someone disciplined for what I will say happens fairly regularly in some way or another.
It's not the same in a stage race though, because I remember in the Philippines, we only finished with two. So you can obviously start, once you get deeper into the tour, they give more leniency, obviously.
Oh, it's not even leniency. You just have to start with five.
Yeah, and okay. Then you can finish with.
You get kicked out, Yeah. You don't make time cut. Yeah. Yeah, so that's.
But that doesn't affect the team as such, because that's what happened to us. Because we started with five, and we had one pull out in the day one, another pull out on day three, two pulled out in day three. And I think it was just you and I that finished.
Yeah, that's fine. No problem.
So a week after we talked about not wanting to talk about bike launches and specifically not wanting to talk about the giant TCR launch, we're going to talk about the giant TCR launch, but I'm going to come at this from a different angle, all right?
Okay, yep.
So giant TCR is going to be launched very soon. I would even hazard a guess the beginning of March.
Okay.
I am fully certain that as we speak right now,
this very, very second,
bike reviewers, be they magazine based, be they YouTube based, have the giant TCR under their chamois.
In the Cotswolds.
Exactly. Currently doing the laps of the Cotswolds. So it kind of got me thinking, when this embargo lifts, some point in March.
Yep.
We're going to get flooded, Jesse. The feeds are going to be smashed with TCR spec videos.
Yep.
And I was thinking, I wonder what they're going to look like.
Mm.
I wonder what the thumbnail's going to be.
Yep.
And I wonder what the title's going to be.
Yep. What's the angle?
So can we start with... GCN?
Well,
we start with GCN. That's the obvious place to start. Yeah. We know they're going to do one.
They are. Well, okay. Well, you got to kind of go start with, well, what a giant going to, what's the spec sheet from Giant, the sort of one page overview that the reviewers are then going to be looking at everything through the lens that Giant give them. So, yeah, what's that going to be? I don't know what you think. Okay. So what would they say that doesn't compete with the Propel and make the Propel potentially redundant? I think it's heritage. So I think you'll see it'll be the TCR.
So this is the thumbnail?
This is the thumbnail. Okay. I think the TCR is going to look quite different than it has for the last decade. So I think people will look at the bike and go, "Ooh, that looks different." But then they're going to play on the hedge and go, Return of the King or A Legend Reborn.
Oh.
2024. Is it 2024 or 2025? 2024 giant TCR. Modern take on an old classic. Yep. I think that's it. Because, I mean, what does it mean? It doesn't matter. It's the TCR in 2024. Beautiful. I mean, who cares what the specs are?
That's perfect just angle for GCN.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect angle. The thumbnail will be one of their sort of highly produced. They're very good thumbnails. They're ad thumbnails, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
It'll look, depth of field will be up there. Any thoughts on that? So is the thumbnail going to have any text in it, do you think? Or is it just,
I agree. No technical. They won't go near the technical stuff. Mm. I think they'll just double down on this is the TCR. Yep,
Return of the King.
Yep. And it'll be potentially as well, not just the profile shot of the bike. I think they'll try and use someone riding the bike out of the saddle.
Disagree.
Probably up a climb. You reckon they're
going to? Disagree.
Okay.
Disagree. I think it's going to be all about that frame.
Okay. No, I think that's Dave Arseth. He just goes.
Well, hang on.
So far in, it's just the frame, and then it'll have.
Thank you. Okay. Dave Arseth's my guy.
Okay, sorry.
You got to do GCN. All right. So my take with Dave is currently smashing it about these local hills as we speak.
Yep.
But he's. Okay. His thumbnail is going to be. It's classic.
Can I just say that the thumbnails are probably already being. It created as we speak. There's probably some Filipino making it up right now.
They're done. Yep.
So it's happening.
Yep. Arthur's thumbnail will be, it will be ideally a white TCR. I don't know what, he's probably doesn't get to choose that, but I think hopefully it's a whiter TCR. There's going to be an arrow pointing to the frame.
Ooh.
Okay? Because I reckon he's going to hit a spec.
Mm-hmm.
His goes, No, I'm going to stick with this. His goes a spec. It's going to be an arrow pointing to the frame with 591 grams or whatever the claimed frame weight is.
Yep.
That's Giant's top spec for this bike is going to be we are so fucking light, the lightest TCR ever.
How could it possibly be the lightest TCR ever? They'll find a way. Don't worry.
Lightest TCR ever.
Look. Yep.
That's your spec.
The lightest seat tube of the TCR ever. Yep. Okay.
Who else has got one?
Who's heading out?
Well, I mean, you've got your bike radars, your cycling weeklies. I can't really get excited about what holding at speed and point it downhill are going to say or are going to do about it, but. Yeah,
There's gonna be someone. It's potentially Cycling Weekly that do. It's either gonna be SL8 Killer, or the new king, top of the pile, just the duck's nuts. One. There's gonna be that too. Of holy shit. This is literally the best bike that has ever existed. I'm pretty sure someone's going to have to go that route. And Bike Radar or Cycling Weekly, I'd say.
Does anyone go the reverse? Does anyone go negative?
Missed the mark this year.
Does anyone mention the war? Does anyone say, you know what? The Propel kind of... is the bike you need. I don't know why Giant are doing this.
Hmm.
I don't think we're probably there yet. I think maybe Dave references it. Stays clear. Go on, Dave. Put an arrow on the frame. Go on. Just do it. Do it for me, please.
Maybe someone brings the price into it. I don't know what Giant are going to do with the pricing strategy, but there's the potential avenue for... the price in the thumbnail or the title, if Giant managed to do some, what would it be, top spec for 14K, something like that is probably the other one. Not as common. It would have to be pretty extreme pricing.
I reckon that's a potential bike radar.
Yeah. Okay.
That's because that's very much their audience, I reckon. So, mm-hmm. That could be that route. Yep. You're right, though. They'd have to do something pretty special price-wise to do it.
Yeah.
I do think we're not out of touch, but I do think I stand by my comments about this bike that it's – I think it's the biggest bike launch of 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Just purely on the heritage.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many – like I was – even the riding that I've done the last couple of weekends, there's just so many – people out there riding who that's the bike they're going to ride because they've known it. They've known it for 20 years. And even if it's changed a little bit, it's still the same TCR to them. And it does exactly what they want a bike to do because they're going to do one or two hilly fondos every year. And now their bike's going to weigh less than 7 kilos to do it. And does it matter when they're maybe do a C grade crit, probably not. You know, it's the bike for the. No, I'm not going to say it's the bike for the masses, but it's. That TCR, maybe it's an Australian thing.
No, yeah.
But that cult.
Oh.
They're cultish about their TCRs.
The TCR Tuesdays, TCR. It's name the top five bike models over the last 20 years. TCRs. Mm-hmm.
100%.
Definitely up there. I mean, yeah. It's up. No two ways about it. Definitely. It's got the heritage.
What would your thumbnail be, Jesse?
What are we? Okay, so that's the next question. So what is the Nero
show? What's
show's...
the Nero show thumbnail? Big punk of poo on it and dog of a bike? No.
I really like to think that we will either... The thumbnail could be from us. I genuinely would like to think this, that we go... The thumbnail is... Game changer, legitimate, best value performance bike, and we fully Nero sticker it.
Ooh.
Or we fully shitbag it and just go, nah, you guys have totally missed it, poo emoji. I would like to think that it could go either way.
Okay.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
If maybe people are like, nah, you guys just shitbag everything. Like maybe.
Which I do keep getting told, which surprises me. I don't think we're that negative. I really don't.
Okay.
I know you don't want me to say this, but I'm going to say it. It still blows my mind, Nero Show community, and I'm sure you'll probably agree with me, that someone at Giant hasn't reached out to Jesse and gone, you know what? You're on an old rim brake TCR. You like TCRs. What's a really good story? Put you on a new one, let you ride it, share it with the Nero Show people. It blows my mind. Giant has offered to do that. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
Here's a problem. What if it's a flop? But I guess the point is they should back the product.
You can't say to me, if you work at Giant, you cannot say to me that someone riding a bike that is 10 years old is not as good as your absolute – if you can't stand behind that,
okay,
then what are you even doing?
Well, that's a good point. Okay.
Like, and you're not at – okay.
Unless they think that I'm going to be vindictive about it for some reason and think I would just trash it. Just, I wouldn't do that, but maybe that's the. But you're right.
I know, like, that's
I'm on a 2017 bike. You'd think the 2024 would be noticeably better.
I know that's the answer, that they're terrified. But I mean, the flip side is you're not a dickhead. You're just a bike rider. Like, you really are, and you know what is a good bike and what is a bad bike. You've ridden some dogs back in the day, but. You know, you can't tell me a top of the line TCR is going to have Jesse Coyle sitting in front of me saying, you know what, get rid of it. It's just not.
Of all these bikes that are getting released and have gotten released, the TCR is probably the one that I'd be curious to ride the most because I've got the top spec 2017 one, which is now 7 years old. So it would be quite an interesting comparison to ride that. And ride the new one and then really clearly be able to say within the exact same model of bike if Giant are saying it's still doing the same purpose, how much has it improved in 7 years? Because you'd think it should be black and white, cut and dry. Oh, this thing absolutely dusts off the 2017 frame set and spec. So spoiler, Giant didn't send me one to test, right? So I'm not riding one, but it would be an interesting comparison to compare it in the TCR family. Yeah. So that time of the episode, Chris, subscriber question. Let's play it.
G'day, boys. My question for you is, I was listening to the TAPR podcast with Matej Mohoric about descending, like in the first bits he spoke a lot about descending and how to descend properly, which is really fascinating, but it got me thinking, why is performance training so popular and everyone talks about it, but no one talks about technical coaching?
That is a bloody good question. And I don't disagree. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before. You go out on a Saturday, you ride up north to Bobbin Head, 8-minute climb, you ride back up. Half the people coming down the other side are not technically descending in even just the correct position, let alone the lines they're taking and that sort of thing. You can see they're actively nervous descending. Like, it is a problem.
It is a problem. I don't know the answer, but I can give some experience on some of this stuff. And I know you guys used to do some technical experience-based training. It's very time inefficient. And unfortunately, just with the nature of the way coaching has gone now, by the looks of it, it's not geographically centrally located. So, you know, you might have how many athletes in Sydney?
5.
And you can watch as many YouTube videos or listen to two idiots talk about descending as much as you want, but there is nothing like descending behind someone who knows what they're doing and trying to mimic them. And just to double down on that point you made about the group rides, I felt like such a dickhead on the weekend. So I'm coming back from my ride and I'm about to descend down Bobbin Head, and there's a there's a charity ride group out and they've all got their headsets on and their race radios, and they start descending and they're all in the tops. You know, there's ride, I'm not going to give out about them, but there's ride leaders there. They're not paying attention to that. They're traffic management people, basically.
Yeah.
And I go past them and I said stuff like, guys, get in the drops, get in the drops, get in the drops. It's much easier down here. And I'm going past them going, down in the drops, guys, down in the drops. And, of course, I'm going fast. They're going fast. I'm having to shout.
Yeah.
And so I come across as this, like,
I got on the road.
Dickhead just shouting abuse at them. But, like, I'm trying to offer them, like, it's very simple. Just get down here, guys. That's literally all. And so, you know, even offering people advice or hand, it's difficult. Well, it comes with sort of a loaded like attitude, I suppose.
Well, especially if you're a random blowing past them on a descent. That, I mean, that's where clubs come in, because generally with a club, you're on a club ride, you have a bit more time. Hopefully someone higher up at the club, more experienced, can guide you. But if you're not riding with a club, I mean, where do you learn how to descend? What? Watch a YouTube video. It's a problem. I've gone through that problem too, because I used to be the guy as well on any ride where you would sort of dread the crest of the hill, which is going into the descent. You'd be thinking about it all that time. Oh shit, we got to descend down waterfall. And you get, you know, the whole 10 kilometers before, they're going, oh, that descent's coming up. Oh, and then you get there and you're super nervous because your descending skill's not great and everyone else is going faster. And it's a really anxiety-ridden part of the ride is the running and then the descent. Not to mention, if you're also not technically proficient descending, it's more dangerous because you're not in control. The only thing I can say is, if there is someone in your local area or even within driving distance that does descending coaching or clinics, and that is good, it's worth every penny. Anyone I coach, I would say try and find someone that can pay for it if it's a service available. If not, ask a friend to that's more experienced to at least get your, guide you in the right direction, and you can follow them down. A couple of other things as well. When I was, most people don't train their descending or cornering for that matter. Like when I was starting out a little bit, I would go and just ride the descents up and down. And I would naturally get it from some of the rides we didn't because you were more experienced than I was. But like most people never practice their descents. The only time they've descended is just, oh, I happened to be riding down this hill on this loop I wanted to do. Not actually repeat it and take what you've probably seen on YouTube. A lot of the advice in some of the descending videos on YouTube is quite good. It's just that you've never actually gone and tried to apply it multiple times in a single session. So you just go and ride the descent up and down multiple times, practice the lines, the position, the outside foot, all that stuff that they, where you're looking, exiting the corner, all that stuff that they will say on a YouTube video that you forget the next time you ride, go and practice it. Same with crits. Go and just on your own, practice your crit cornering, bring up the speed. Like, that most people haven't had someone tell them that, hey, you're not that good at descending. Go and actually practice it thoughtfully. Otherwise, how are you expecting to get better at it?
Yeah. I mean, my only two things about it was if you are doing a training session and it's a hill rep, use the descents of the hill rep as training as well. Like, I find massive value in that because once you actually get really familiar with a corner or a sequence of corners, you start to become more confident, and that's important, and you push yourself more and more into those corners because you know the ins and outs, the apexes of them, and you learn just through repetition of that, and you can take that beyond just that local hill rep. So use that particular rep. The only, and I, this is one of my regrets, my kryptonite when it comes to descending, as you know, it's not descending, bike handling, is hot dog 180 slow speed turns.
Yeah.
Absolute kryptonite to me.
And you can descend well. You'll drop me on a descent.
I back myself with most descenders, normal humans, not Michael Freeberg. But put me going around a cone at a hot dog course, I cannot do it. And I really regret not doing any kind of like cycle cross type stuff where that's the whole event. Or even just taking a cross bike or a mountain down to your local oval and doing really simple stuff, because I was always so frightened on tarmac that I was just going to always slip out doing that stuff. Mm. So that would be my only other thing. Pick your absolute weakness and just get over it, because it's going to linger with you, trust me, for decades.
Mm.
And it's just going to get worse and worse. I noticed another question about the S5. Can we talk about that next week?
Yes.
Because I want to do a full Fondo spec, what I've done to the S5. Yes, I'm running the S5 at peaks, made some changes to it. I want to talk about that, expectations for it, how I have my experience riding it so far as a one by, all that kind of thing. It was a really good question about it. So I do want to definitely get onto that. Have we got time for one more?
Yeah, let's go one more. One more subscriber question. Let's play it here.
Hey guys, if you could have any pie in the sky bike tech, what would it be and why?
Right, so my pie in the sky tech is a bike computer that brings it all together. All right, so
the do it all bike computer. One bike computer to rule them all.
All right, now on my bike computer, I want accurate readout of my tire pressure, front and rear,
mm-hmm,
displayed.
Just buy the $400 Quark tire wheels.
Which I want that on there. So obviously this is in addition to everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I want a CDA number displayed, mm-hmm, to me at all times. So there I am. I'm, you know, in the bunch. I attack. Then I get down into my that's all I'm looking at, just looking at my CDA.
And so that'd be built into the head unit. It's got the wind sensors. It's all there. Okay, yep.
It's all there. It's measuring through my helmet, all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. Perfect. And the last little bit that I want in there, well, maybe this can kind of feature in it, but I want like an InstaGo 3-sized camera, but I want it in the frame. I want it actually mounted in the frame, so there's no. It's part of the aero features of the bike, so I'm not slapping this massive bloody plasma screen on the front of my beautifully aero bars. I want that in the frame and I want it to be controlled by my bike computer. So I've got start, stop, and I can see it. It displays, gives me a live preview of it. Beautiful. That's my tick.
You've just come up, I couldn't even think of that. That is just the built-in CDA sensor into the head
I
unit.
I think about this stuff all the time. I honestly think it. So you know how you don't listen to podcasts? This is where my brain goes when I'm on a solo bike ride. Okay. That bike ride I did on the weekend, 6 hours, no podcast.
Oh, my gosh. Nothing. You are nothing. Sick. It's
Chris.
You're a sick human.
Chris and the birds. Just listening to the birds and thinking about CDA. Yep.
Right. I want some sort of, you know how the iPhone's got the LiDAR detector. I want to sit on the trainer, everything set up. Someone walks around with a phone and properly 3D maps my entire bike fit, and it tells me all the changes I need to make, but not from the camera from side on. I want it 3D mapped, and so I can get a professional bike fit that's looking at everything in 3D space, and it's done in 5 minutes.
I find that interesting. That's your.
Well, I'm still thinking. Oh, you're still thinking. I haven't really done much. That was the first thing that came to mind.
Okay. Considering you've had one bike fit in 3 decades, I find that interesting as the one thing that you want. But yeah.
It's just been relevant. Just so I've been chatting to people that have been getting bike fits done. I'm just going, what are you? We're driving here. It's like a 4-hour thing. You just like all it is bike fits doing is looking at your body on the bike and suggesting changes. Why can't that be mapped? I mean, it'd have to be done accurately, but surely, come on. Bikes are pretty freaking good. Hey, I don't know. I'm thinking, geez, it goes pretty quick. And it's, you know, I don't know. This is so I'm really boring. You had really good like sci-fi ones. I'm like, oh, this is so bad. I wish I had something better. This is so lame and like sounds like I'm pandering. It's like a super fully 100% integrated, not a thing in the air, but is still entirely 100% adjustable. So I 3D map my bike fit. So problem is you're on that. You 3D map with Jesse Coyle's bike fit app. Well, who cares? You can barely adjust anything. I want to be on that, more integrated, but every single touch point I could possibly imagine adjusting, I want to be able to do it.
I like that. So it's a completely malleable, you're generating the shapes. Yeah. I like that. That's nice.
So basically every single touch point has adjustable things somehow. I don't know how you do it. And you can just change everything, every possible measurement. So it's almost like you're having a custom-built bike, but everything's still integrated.
To build it into my bike computer and have – so I could be coming into the base of the back of Falls and I'm like, geez, I'd really bring my bars up for this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thumbs up, lovely. Yeah, I like that.
Yep. Yeah, start of the crit, you know, you're nice and relaxed. You break away off the front, bank, saddle just comes forward and then you tilt over.
CDA just drops.
Yeah. And then you're live, you see it in action. Yeah. Perfect.
I like that. All right. I think that's probably us done this week, Jesse.
I think so.
Make sure to continue to send your questions in to the DMs on the Neuro Cycling Show Instagram page. But apart from that, guys, we will see you all next week.
See you then.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.